Hello, I'm Damien Carrick. Welcome to a special bonus podcast of The Law Report. Matthias Beckier, former Managing Director of Star Entertainment, the company which operates Sydney's Star Casino, and Paula Martin, Star Entertainment's former legal counsel, both failed to address money laundering risks and criminal associations between the years 2017 and 2019. That's the finding this morning of Justice Michael Lee of the Federal Court, who at the same time dismissed similar cases against a number of Star Entertainment's non-executive directors. I'm joined by Justice Anthony Whealy. He's chair of the Centre for Public Integrity, a former New South Wales Court of Appeals judge. He's also former Assistant Commissioner to New South Wales ICAC, the Independent Commission Against Corruption. Now, this morning, Justice Lee handed down a 500-page decision. Neither Anthony Whealy nor I have read that decision, but we did spend an hour this morning watching Justice Michael Lee delivering his findings on the Federal Court's YouTube channel. Anthony Whealy, welcome to The Law Report. How significant is this decision?
Well, it's not perhaps as significant as many commentators had hoped. The big issue here was whether non-executive directors could simply rely on management for the information they received in carrying out their duties and obligations under the Corporations Act, or whether they should, in the exercise of due care and diligence, make further inquiry as to the risks that may be central to the core of the particular business. In other words, the need for directors to have an inquiring mind and not simply rely on management. So that was, I think, a very critical issue. It was one that would have concerned directors around the country generally. Was this going to be a decision that rocked what might be called traditional practices? And put simply, it was not that type of decision. What His Honour did find was simply this, that on the case pleaded by ASIC, and having regard to the evidence they adduced in the hearing, he was not satisfied that ASIC was entitled to relief against the non-executive directors. In other words, he's effectively said, in the circumstances of this case, they were entitled to rely on what management put before them.
So this is a civil penalties case brought by ASIC, the corporate regulator. Who did ASIC commence action against, and what failures was ASIC alleging?
Well, the former board of Star and three of the executives were alleged to have failed to give sufficient focus to money laundering risks and criminal associations, leading to an assertion that they each had breached duties under Section 180 of the Corporations Act.
So why were Matthias Beckier, the former CEO, and the former Chief Legal Counsel, Paula Martin, found to have breached their obligations under Section 180 of the Corporations Act? So these are, if you like, full-time employees of the company.
Yes, they're full-time employees, and of course they're at the coalface, and maybe more significantly, each of them gave evidence, and in the end they were, to one degree or another, criticised by the judge as lacking credibility or reliability as witnesses. That didn't help their case. But I think it was more important to note that as people who are at the coalface, they did have the information and they didn't pass it to the board, or at least not in sufficient fashion for the board to comprehend that some further inquiries might need to be made. So it was easy to see why, in one sense, easy to see why the judge found against those two people. And of course, As you know, both Mr. Hawkins and Mr. Theodore had earlier effectively, if I may use the language of the criminal law, they'd pleaded guilty to this civil charge and had orders made against them, fining them and suspending them from operating further.
You're talking there about two other executives of the company,
yes.
So full-time employees of the company who had,
yes,
if you like, admitted their liability,
yes,
and been dealt with earlier by the judge, or by a judge. I don't know if it was this.
Yes, it was a different judge. For comity and propriety reasons, a different judge was required to deal with them
okay.
than with than Justice Lee.
And just to give listeners a bit of context, we're talking here about how the office holders and the executives, the directors and the executives, dealt with the risks of China-based organisations which organised junkets for high rollers from China.
Yes, as I said, there were sort of three issues. One was the one you've mentioned. The other was the misuse of credit cards and their somewhat corrupt designation as hotel expenses, and I think also just generally criminal associations was the third category.
Okay, so we have the former CEO Matthias Beckier and the former legal counsel Paula Martin found to have breached their obligations. But coming back to these non-executive directors, what
yes.
did Justice Lee have to say about what they do and their role? And he had some really interesting comments.
Yes, well, I think that he made two important preliminary points right at the outset of his summary. And I guess we've got to read the full decision to see, you know, whether there's more to it than appeared at first blush. But the two points were that he said that, first of all, that he could see a tension in the proceedings that ASIC had to face up to because of the different position of executive directors and non-executive directors. And he rather, in a muted way, was critical of ASIC for perhaps not realising that difference or distinction. Secondly, and just as importantly, he said it was necessary to avoid what he called hindsight bias. In other words, he said, when you look back on all that the evidence revealed here, you could be critical of the non-executive directors, but the issue was how did they handle it at the time, in the speed of the moment, at the board meetings when they were confronted with information. It was that test that had to be applied, you know, a sort of test at current times to ascertain whether they had acted in breach of their obligations under the corporation's law. I suppose we could say really then that the victory for the non-executive directors was based on the narrowest possible ground, namely that simply ASIC on the case pleaded and having regard to the evidence it led had not made out its case against the executive directors. So it's a pretty narrow basis really.
What was really interesting was, of course, so just for listeners, non-executive directors are not employees of the company. Rather, they sort of attend board meetings and are given information about how a company is going and then they discuss that at the board meeting.
Right at the outset, he gave, as he's wont to do, a rather colourful example based on historical facts of a particular corporation where he used the phrase, I think, languid, listless indifference and referred to a director who had only ever attended one board meeting during the whole of his career as a director. And he said, things have changed. So I was beginning, at that stage, I thought, well, we're in for a bit of a roller coaster ride here and we will possibly get some strong guidance as to what directors should do in the situation that ASIC was pleading its case. But it didn't turn out that way, really, because, as I say, he really just decided the case on a narrow basis.
Well, it's really interesting. He looks back to that case from Edwardian or Victorian times, and then he
yes.
looks forward and sort of says, and I'm just going to play you an extract of what he has to say about the kinds of information that non-executive board members now receive and the form it takes.
It's now notorious that the board pack of a public company no longer arrives as a modest bundle of papers designed to assist judgment. Often the packs represent an electronic publishing project. No longer posted or delivered by a bike courier, the document loaded is often heroically vast. After seeing many such documents spanning many proceedings as a barrister and judge, a common pattern can be seen. Often there are executive summaries followed by longer summaries of summaries, followed by detailed papers, followed by appendices, annexures and technical attachments whose purpose appears not so much enlightenment as completeness.
Justice Michael Lee there. Anthony Willey, what are your thoughts?
Well, he even went further and said that that what the preparation of these board packs involved was a form of, as he described it, executive triage. which I thought was an amusing expression. But he did contrast that complaint, as it were, about the mass of information that's served up at modern board meetings with a decision by Justice Middleton in the Centro case some years back, where the judge had said that the directors have not only the ability but the obligation to control the flow of information that comes to them. So in other words, they can put their foot down about these things and they can demand changes if necessary so that what appears before them is actually salient and capable of being read even in a relatively short time. So he contrasted those two situations, the massive board packs on the one hand and directors' ability to control the flow of information on the other. But it was an interesting observation, as you say.
And Justice Lee goes on to say,
the temptation exists for those preparing the pack to chuck everything in. In this sense, the pack is doing two jobs at once. Officially, it's supposed to inform the board. Unofficially, it serves to insulate the preparers from potential criticism.
So I think what Justice Lee is saying there is sometimes it's difficult for non-executive directors to separate the wheat from the chaff.
Yes, although, you know, in other parts of his decision, he says that they have an obligation, you know, to not just sit there passively and just let it flow over them. They have to look at it very critically, and one would expect that, and sift through it. Sometimes they can't, of course, you know, if a board meeting is called hurriedly and so on. But I think in general terms, he's got a foot in both camps there. He is suggesting, as you say, that it's difficult for non-executive directors being confronted with a massive amount of material. But on the other hand, dealing with this present case, he makes the point the particular dangers of casino operations are well known, and the directors, non-executive directors of such an organisation, need to show vigilance, is what he said. He pointed to the fact that it was investigative journalism that uncovered some of the money laundering activities of Star, rather than the directors. And I guess to that extent, he's been critical. And he said that the minutes of all the meetings, and bear in mind the directors, the non-executive directors didn't give evidence in these proceedings. They didn't have to and they didn't. But he did make the observation that the minutes of all the meetings did not particularly show the directors exercising a high level of oversight.
Justice Willie, Anthony Willie, can I ask you, what did he say? What did Justice Michael Lee say about the decision of the non-executive directors not to give evidence, bearing in mind that none of them have been found to have breached their obligations under the corporations law? The two people who did enter the witness box, they have been found to have breached their duties,
yes,
under the Corporations Act.
Well, the judge knew, as well as we all do, that none of the non-executive directors had to give evidence. There was evidence adduced on behalf of Mr. O'Neill, one of them, and the judge did make a slight criticism by suggesting that the reasons that were advanced for Mr. O'Neill not giving evidence didn't seem to be particularly weighty. But he made no comment about the others other than to say that, you know, on one view of it, their decision not to give evidence, that is the non-executive directors, has been vindicated. That's the way he put it. But he did go on to say, however, that they can't really just pat themselves on the back for that, because, as he said, the minutes had shown that the directors were not really exercising a high level of oversight. However, again, he qualified that by saying that Section 180 does not impose what he called a standard of excellence. So he didn't exactly tell us what standard did apply, but he did ultimately find that on the case pleaded and having regard to the evidence adduced, he was not satisfied that ASIC were entitled to relief against those non-executive directors.
A couple of final questions. What did Justice Lee have to say about the use of AI?
Well, a very interesting discussion. I'm not sure that he came to any real conclusion about it, but he examined the benefits and pitfalls of AI as a weapon of assistance to directors at board meetings, particularly directors getting these massive board packs and so on. But again, he cautioned, as so many institutions do, that they may not be accurate and that you can't fully rely on them if AI is the creator of the material that's produced.
If it distills a summary and helps the non-executive directors get through that pack.
As long as it's accurate, that's the problem, and I think he recognised that. So he wasn't saying, I don't think he was giving a massive endorsement to AI as a way to solve this problem, but he did point to it as a tool that could be used, but one that had to be used responsibly and carefully.
Okay, so we're speaking on Thursday, and Justice Lee has just made his findings. There's a 500-page judgment, which neither of us have yet read. But he didn't this morning impose any orders. That will happen at a later point. What might they include?
Well, the only order he made today was to stand the matter over for 7 days. And I think that what we could expect is that there will be submissions made on behalf of the two executive directors against whom adverse findings have been made as to what civil penalty should be imposed on them.
Which could be fines, which could be...
Fines and or suspensions.
Suspensions, preventing them from certain roles.
Yep, that's right. And, of course, the other issue that will come up is the question of the costs of the non-executive directors who've had a victory. I should think they'll want to be compensated by an order for cost in their favour.
Anthony Willey, in conclusion, I think what we perhaps expected before the decision came down was some kind of discussion about gambling and casinos and what have you, but it's turned out to be much more focused on directors' duties. How do you reflect on that?
Well, I suppose I'd say that, as I did right at the outset, that there was a big issue here, and it's one that the media seized on, and it was an important issue, and that is, what is the obligation on directors running a casino where there may be questionable conduct going on at a lower level and where it may well be known to the executive team, but where it's not overtly known to the non-executive directors? It's a big issue, and in some respects the decision, although, I haven't read the 500 pages, but the summary decision is a little disappointing because it deliberately divorces itself from any big statement about that central issue and just simply says, well, on the case pleaded and having regard to the evidence adduced, no, the directors are not being shown, the non-executive directors have not been shown to have been in breach of the corporation's law. So it's not significant in that sense. I suppose it'll cause a breath of relief amongst non-executive directors, but on the other hand, it's to be hoped that maybe we're not, as non-executive directors, we're not to be held to standards of excellence, but we should be held to standards, to very high standards, particularly in corporations that are involved in activities that are known to be nefariously linked to criminal behaviour and serious misconduct. That's my take on it.
And could ASIC appeal the decision?
They could, but poor old ASIC get bruised time and time again. I don't know whether they'll want to, but there still is an important issue there that perhaps has not been addressed by the judge. I say that respectfully because, as I say, I haven't read his full decision, but I wouldn't be surprised if there is an appeal here.
Anthony Willey, Justice Anthony Willey, Chair of the Centre for Public Integrity, a former New South Wales Court of Appeals judge. He's also a former Assistant Commissioner to the New South Wales ICAC, the Independent Commission Against Corruption. Anthony, thank you. Thank you very much for speaking to the Law Report.
It's a pleasure, Damien.
That's all we have time for on this special bonus podcast of The Law Report. A big thank you to audio producer Kerry Dell. I'm Damien Carrick. Talk to you next time with more law.